Welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. Our topic for the hour tonight is Beyond Summer School, a new vision for summer learning. If summer school conjures up an image of a dreary classroom where kids sit in rows filling out multiplication worksheets all day, well, think again. In the past few years, summer school has begun to evolve dramatically in many school districts to become an engaging experience that combines academic learning with fun enrichment activities. Summer school is changing because researchers have new data about the impact of those empty summer months on student learning, especially for low-income kids. The results are startling. By the end of fifth grade, many low-income students are up to three grade levels behind their more affluent peers as a result of losing ground academically during the summer months. But at the same time that educators are realizing the importance of high-quality summer learning, districts are seeing funding dry up across California to pay for these very programs. It's a dilemma that could have huge consequences for the academic outcomes of California's low-income children. And tonight on our program, we explore these new understandings about summer school and highlight the creative ways that districts around the Bay Area are partnering with community-based organizations to provide summer learning programs that offer academic support as well as enrichment. And let's go to our guests here in the studio with me, our Katie Brackenridge. She's Senior Director of Out of School Time Initiatives Partnership for Children and Youth. Katie oversees the partnership's Summer Matters program, which is working to expand and improve summer learning across California. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you.
And we're also joined by Lara Fox. She's Director of School Site Programs with the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Peninsula. Lara oversees the Girls and Boys Clubs programs, specifically their school site programs, which serve 700 elementary and middle school students during the school year and summer in the Ravenswood and Redwood City school districts. Welcome, Lara.
Thank you.
And finally, we're joined by Jane O'Brien, coordinator of Summer Learning Programs, Family, School, and Community Partnerships with the Oakland Unified School District. Jane coordinates the Summer Learning Programs in Oakland, which have grown from serving 800 students in 2007 to serving over 6,500 students just last year through partnerships with community-based organizations. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you.
And as always, we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation. We'll be opening our phones in about 20 minutes. You can call 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134 to join our conversation. You can email us now at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. So, Katie Brackenridge, with Out of School Time Initiatives Partnership for Children and Youth, I wanted to start with you. What's the difference between summer school and summer learning?
Great question. You know, we're a nonprofit intermediary, and we work with school districts and community-based organizations as partners across the state. And what we're seeing and what research is showing is that while summer school is important and some kids definitely need remediation, they also need a whole other set of supports that can help get them motivated about learning and really engaged in the process. So they come back to school not just having, you know, sadly done more worksheets and been more frustrated by the process of learning, but really inspired by project-based learning, by cooperative learning, by activities that kind of engage them with each other in new and interesting ways. So absolutely building on what they do during the school year, but helping them get involved in learning in new and different ways with, for example, arts projects and science and theater and all the kinds of things that we know kids love and get excited about.
And so how long is this concept of an expanded learning environment and enrichment environment during the summer months, how long has it existed for?
Oh, I think it's been out there for a very, very long time. I mean, as parents, many of us have to find summer camps for our kids, and those are the kinds of things that I, as a parent, am looking for. I don't necessarily want my kid doing tutoring during the summer. If I felt that they were behind in some area, yeah, I might want them to have some tutoring, but I also want them to spend the summer really engaged in, you know, digging around and playing with stuff and learning by doing. And so I think that concept has been around for as long as there have been parents, knowing what kids love and need. So I think that what may be new is recognizing how important that is for all kids.
Tell us a little bit more about that. What do you mean?
Well, I think traditionally low-income children who may be identified as struggling in school, who may have come into school a little bit behind their more middle-income peers, are targeted as needing additional help, and that help can often take the form of remediation, which can almost feel punitive. And for me, as a parent, that's kind of the last thing I would want my child to be going into school for. I want them to go in and be excited about the projects they're going to get to do and the learning that they're going to get to do. So I think what is exciting about this new vision for summer learning is really acknowledging that all children need that, and that we should be building these programs not just to address the kind of losses that we see in kids, but really to be looking at their long-term inspiration for the learning process.
I wonder if implied in your comment there is that for the low-income children, going back to school, no matter what sort of the stigma might be attached, that might be attached to it, the experience itself up until recent years perhaps was lacking something that their middle-income peers were getting that they weren't getting in these settings. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Right. Well, I certainly don't want to make any generalizations about the experience of low-income children in general, but the research around what kids from with families with different resources have been experiencing in the summer is really clear. I mean, you had referenced the difference by the end of fifth grade of three grade levels based on the differences in experiences that families in low-income situations have versus middle-income situations. So those families where their parents are around all day, are talking to them all day, are doing stuff with them, take them places, take them to museums, take them to the movies, take them on trips, those kids are not experiencing summer learning loss. They're either maintaining or going a little bit ahead during the summer. Low-income kids have a very different experience if their parents are not able to stay with them all day and kind of engage them. They spend a lot of time at home watching TV. They may be out on the street in a dangerous situation, but in general, they're not doing a lot of activities where that are promoting their reading or math or vocabulary level.
And they don't have access, perhaps, to summer camps or other types of programs that can enrich them.
That have often cost a lot of money, so they may not be able to. Their families may not be able to purchase those services, and then when they do get served, you know, it may be through summer school is the best option, which tends to be more remedial and less fun. Traditionally, it doesn't have to be that way, and hopefully it won't continue that way. So they're having a very different experience.
So Jane O'Brien with the Oakland Unified School District, just to turn the conversation to you for a moment, think back for a moment before perhaps recent developments. What was summer school like in the Oakland Unified School District? Mm-hmm. Is it kind of like what Katie is talking about, where it was perhaps not as stimulating, or it was more punitive, or it had at least felt that way, and had there was a way in which it lacked in its abilities to enrich children over time?
Well, I think that for the most part, it really addressed students who needed to make up credit. And certainly we see that as being a high need, particularly for our high school students who are wanting to graduate on time and are credits behind. And so the main thrust was to make sure that students kind of received any types of credit that they needed in order to kind of progress. And it's only been in the past 4 to 5 years that we've actually kind of broadened that expectation and widened it. And as a result of building on that foundation, we've been able to reach out to community partners and to receive additional funding so that we had more capability of expanding the types of programs we could offer.
Mm-hmm. And say a little bit more about how the research that has been referenced a couple of times already this evening, how that impacted you when you saw the research. For our listeners' sake, we're talking about a study that was done by the RAND Corporation that was published last year that shows the gap between low-income children who are not necessarily able to access enrichment activities over the summer and their middle-income peers in ways that sort of stretch perhaps a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. So much of the research that we looked at back in 2007, and that was actually before I came into this position, was through John Hopkins that kind of followed 800 students in the Baltimore City school system and followed them from K straight through high school. And that research was pivotal in the sense that it showed us that all students learn at the same rate during the school year, but students that don't have access to resources start to experience what we call summer slide. And it was from that some of the district leaders who were very forward-thinking recognized that summer is a critical time for us to support students, many of our students who don't have access to those resources.
And say a little bit more in terms of numbers or statistics of how do you quantify those differences, and what is the impact long range?
Well, the research coming out now is saying that 2/3 of the achievement gap for 9th graders can be attributed to summer learning loss, and so you start to see that it builds over time. Certainly, some of the research that we've done in our district has shown the support of summer. We followed 1,250 of our elementary students in the summer of 2010, and we looked at their spring performance and then their fall performance, and we saw that from that cohort they jumped from 36% to 52% proficient on the benchmark. And so it's one thing to see national research and say, oh, well, that couldn't be true for our students. And then sure enough, they participate in these summer programs, and it creates a foundation for them to start their next grade at a stronger level.
And Katie, back to you for a second. Why are these gaps, as they sound pretty obviously important and notable and requiring some attention. Tell us how this changes a child's life moving forward.
Well, I think there's a lot of research that shows what happens to kids in 9th grade. That's a very pivotal year. So you can imagine if you're coming in significantly below your peers, you're going to make different decisions as you move forward. Those are really important decisions about how you conduct yourself in school, how hard you study, your expectations for your own success. So what we see is, kids who aren't doing well in 9th grade also are more likely to be the ones who drop out. And that's a huge problem in communities like Oakland. Mm-hmm. So for Oakland to take on summer learning is really exciting because it's addressing a very specific potential opportunity to meet kids right where they need it before they get to that critical 9th grade year and make decisions about what they're going to do next.
So it impacts high school, it impacts eventually whether they decide to go to college and so on and so forth. So these little sort of dips that occur consistently year in and year out over the summer months, it's just this cumulative loss that just never gets recuperated. Is that right? Is that what we're getting here?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's pretty startling. And I know that the three of you are here to combat that. So I want to bring into the conversation Laura Fox, and she is the director of school site programs with the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Peninsula. So, Laura, tell us a little bit about how you take a statistic or a series of statistics and some and the implications of summer slide, as it's called, and then decide to create programming to combat that.
So we've been operating in schools for a long time, and so some of our impetus for providing academic summer programs that would counter the summer learning losses is really coming from the fact that our school districts don't have summer school anymore. They can't afford it. And so there's absolutely no summer learning opportunity available to our kids at no cost.
So let me stop you there. Isn't summer school mandatory? Like that school districts have summer schools?
No.
Oh.
So about, this is all wrapped up in school funding. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago when categorical flexibility allowed the one pot of money that was kind of allocated, it was called core summer school funding, was freed up to be used by anything that the districts wanted to use it for. And given all the budget cuts, it kind of got absorbed into the regular school day, and that's what decimated summer school.
I see. Okay, that's very interesting to me. I just never thought that like summer school was quote unquote optional.
I mean, there are some summer school programs that are still happening. So
okay.
At the high school level, there's CASI
prep
and some
okay,
other
but the fact that a school district could decide it's just not going to have summer school. That's
right, and so the school districts that I'm talking about are K-8 school districts. Mm-hmm. And so one of those school districts has a foundation that supports it, the Ravenswood Education Foundation, and they one of their key focus areas for their funding is summer learning. So we had been running summer programs already, and 2 years ago we teamed up with the Ravenswood Education Foundation to think through a really rigorous model that could provide a program that would absolutely combat summer learning loss at the same time as being a youth development program in the spirit of the Boys and Girls Club. So we co-designed a model that now we use in both the Ravenswood and Redwood City schools, which includes school teachers. So we hire certified teachers from the schools that we work with, as well as other schools as needed. And they worked hand in hand with our after school instructors. So we're putting 20 kids in a classroom with two adults who are used to teaching. We also have a volunteer, at least one volunteer in every single classroom. So we're able to have low ratios because we have at least three adults in each classroom. We're teaching math, science, and literacy. And we're sort of hiding the literacy in the science class because the kids get knocked over the head with math and literacy during the school year. Mm. And science is a true treat. They don't really get it in the school year very often. And so it's really exciting to them to learn it. It's something that we've heard from our high school principals. Our kids are coming really ill-prepared to high school for science. And so it's a great way of building their skills for high school early. And they go on a number of field trips each summer that relate to their science class. So they're doing a language arts project where they're reading a book for the entire summer that's related to their science class. They're going on field trips. There's a lot of integration of different sources of knowledge. The math class is hands-on and exploratory as well. And so it's a real opportunity for teachers to have fun in the summer. Kids have fun as well. So we've had really strong success with our model. Last summer, we had about 90% of kids in both reading and math. Based on our pre and post tests, we would say 90%. We prevented summer learning loss. And within that, 75% in math actually increased their scores over the summer, and about 60% in writing. So we actually saw growth on top of just holding steady.
Hmm. So say a little bit more about how you develop a curriculum that's more hands-on and that's that gets kids to kind of learn sort of perhaps by accident.
Well, we hire teachers who are considered master teachers by their principals. So we're looking at pretty skilled teachers who view curriculum development and teaching as just a lot of fun and who are excited to have the opportunity in the summer to do something different than what they do in the school year. So they're actually each designing their own curriculum. And for science, you know, they pick a theme and they carry that theme throughout everything.
So it sounds like summer school is sort of like, given the fact that summer school is not mandatory, it's also not mandatory how it's conducted, at least in the way you're describing it.
That's true.
And so it throws open all sorts of possibilities.
It does. And so we're finding a lot of teachers interested in the opportunity. They also have the opportunity to mentor our staff. So our after-school instructors from the school year are being paired up with skilled teachers who are then coaching them. And they're developing new skills that they can apply during the school year. And so there's mm-hmm. this opportunity to really develop our whole staff in addition to our kids through these programs. Mm.
And what percentage of the teachers that you employ in the school districts you work with come from the school districts themselves as opposed from outside?
At each of our school sites, about half the teachers are coming from that school, and of the other half, probably another half, so another 25% of our teachers are coming from the district, and just about a quarter are coming from outside the district.
Hmm. Wow. So, and I imagine given how teachers often feel constrained by having to teach a certain curriculum and, you know, teaching to the test, something that we've talked about here before, that this is a great opportunity for them to expand and, I imagine, innovate in ways that they might be able to bring back with them once the, you know, August hits.
Absolutely. One of the most exciting pieces of our summer programs, I think from the teacher's perspective, is watching, for example, our middle school teachers partner. So we have a middle school teacher who teaches science to all three grade levels, one who teaches language arts to all three grade levels, one who teaches math to all three grade levels. And last summer, the science and language arts teachers, who are both math teachers during the school year, but are getting to use another piece of their credential during the summer, got together and they planned this science course focused on ecosystems and a language arts class focused on novels set in intense ecosystems. So they read Island of the Blue Dolphins, Brian's Winter, Sign of the Beaver, and the science teacher could constantly reference to the kids, you know, exactly what they'd read the night before and how that related to what he was teaching them about the ecosystems. And so I think that there was a lot of playfulness in the partnership among the teachers that they could obviously grow from during the school year as well.
In case you're just joining us, this is City Visions on 91.7 KALW and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're talking Beyond Summer School, a new vision for summer learning, with our guests, Katie Brackenridge, Senior Director of Out of School Time Initiatives Partnership for Children and Youth, Lara Fox, Director of School Site Programs with the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Peninsula, and Jane O'Brien, Coordinator of Summer Learning Programs, Family, School, and Community Partnerships with the Oakland Unified School District. It's time for you to join our conversation. The number to dial to ask questions or share comments with our guests is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. If you have a child who is in summer school or is planning on going to summer school this year or has been in summer school before and you've had experiences with that, tell us a little bit about that experience for your child and yourself as a parent. 415-841-4134 or feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So I wanted to get back to you, Katie, about something you alluded to briefly, which is some of the funding landscape that led to some of this crisis around the summer school. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay. Well, I think we all know that school districts across the state have kind of been decimated in this economic climate and cuts at the state level. And so one of the pieces of that puzzle is that the state decided to give districts more flexibility with the what's called categorical funding, which was generally set aside for a specific category of programming. And in that, when they created that categorical flexibility, that allowed districts to have a lot more flexibility about what they did with the funding. And as a result, summer school funding was no longer available. It doesn't, however, mean that districts couldn't choose to use some of their funding for summer school, right? So they could use their Title I funding for summer school, which is largely what Oakland Unified is doing. And we're hearing about some other districts around the state who are starting to do that. And as that funding kind of comes back online, as people start looking more at this research and recognizing the important role that summer learning can play in combating the achievement gap, we're really hoping that they look at programs like Lara's and say, okay, there's some options here. We don't have to do it the way we've always done it. Maybe we should look some more at the research to see what's effective with kids. And, you know, back to that RAND Corporation report, that report was really clear that there are benefits that both Jane and Lara have cited to doing this kind of holistic programming. And they found that those benefits exist for voluntary summer programs, for mandatory summer programs, and for summer reading programs like at the library. Anything that gets kids kind of engaged with words, with learning over the summer can really have an impact, and that impact is lasting. The research is showing that it's at least 2 years of an impact is showing up in kids' achievement. So it's really an important kind of trigger for kids to be able to stay at the same level or advance during the summer.
So Jane, talk about the Oakland Unified School District experience in terms of trying to deal with the shrinking funds for education and how you just give us a sense of how much things shrank and what kinds of choices needed to be made. And then the next part would be, how did you find a way to preserve the funding for summer learning so that you could do the things that you wanted to do?
Well, we certainly have some key leaders who are devoted to summer. And so it always helps to have people in cabinet who have that commitment. And because it's been so long, you know, so ongoing, as a result of that, we have developed the programs over the last 4 years. And I think part of one of the amazing things that has come out of this is the fact that the community partners and additional funding from Bechtel and Packard have come in to kind of augment the programs that we were able to establish. One of the things that happened back in 2007 was that the district realized that if they were going to make a commitment to summer, then they had to change the infrastructure in order to activate summer happening. As you can imagine, public school systems have kind of antiquated infrastructures. And so that required some very forward thinking to make these programs happen during the summer.
Give us some examples.
Well, of our employees, no one is set up for summer pay. And so we have to kind of reinstitute kind of a start of the school year for summer so that we can take the 1,100 employees for summer and set them up. And so this requires constant conversations in what I call our interdepartmental summer programs team, which is fiscal, you know, payroll, HR, to kind of activate the employees at each of the sites. The other piece to remember is that in Oakland, each of the schools decides on how to spend their own funding. And so it's kind of like having 100 states, and you're trying to kind of get a coalition or coordination of who's going to have funding for summer, and have they made it a priority, and how can we help them make that happen. But partly, you know, you could have a site that could say, I'm going to have a summer program. And then as a result of that, we can use that as a foundation to build our summer pre-K camp, which is funded out of Alameda County First Five. And then you will see, you know, on that campus, a preschool program preparing kids who've had no preschool experience for kindergarten in the fall. And so what happens is there's an activation of these activities on site that help link and kind of create different types of programs across the district. And as a result of that, you know, we grew from 800 students in 2007, and we peaked out in 2010 with 8,000 students, and that was due in part to the stimulus money that came in.
Hmm. So, and what's the stimulus money there? Is it from?
So it was money that came in 2 years ago and needed to be spent, I think, by the fall of 2010. And so many of the sites decided to make summer a priority, and that's how we jumped from about, you know, 7,000 students from the previous summer to 8,000. So it really kind of activated many programs to get up and running.
And so, what are you doing now as the stimulus funds are over?
Well, so last summer was the first post-stimulus, and so we still had about 6,500 students at about 50 sites, 80 programs, and we're anticipating maybe about the same, maybe a little under for this summer. One of the more magical things that's happened is due to the funding from Bechtel and Packard and from the National Summer Learning Association is that we're now able to kind of go in the direction that Laura has been talking about, and that is provide an afternoon program that would focus on STEM enrichment so that we can now take our morning programs funded by Title I and bridge them with those afternoon programs to provide an all-day program for the students. And so it's never been done before, and we're very excited.
Hmm. And so, Katie, what other examples do you know of sort of creative funding plans that have allowed summer learning to blossom in various places?
Great. One of the other things that Oakland is doing right now is waiting for the results of the 21st Century Community Learning Center grant that was submitted a few months ago, and that's supposed to come out any day, which would allow for its funding for after school programs, but it has a small pot of money that we call supplemental money that can fund summer programs. And there's been a lot of interest around summer to the point where the state superintendent of public instruction sponsored and the governor signed a bill that would allow more flexibility for grantees with this funding to operate a longer program. And to have a little bit more flexibility about how they use that to serve the many different kids in their district. And that's been a real boon for all of these after-school providers, most of whom are districts, to be able to use their supplemental money more effectively in the summer. We're really excited about that because we think it gives school districts like Oakland a lot more flexibility to match with the Title I money to really create this whole day experience for kids that can be, like Laura's program, a lot more for a lot more kids.
Hmm. And Laura, what is the funding mix for your programs?
So about 25% of our funding is supplemental funds from 21st Century and ACES, the state equivalent of 21st Century. So two of our sites have a fair amount, $22,000 at one site and $33,000 at another. So a really good chunk of money from supplemental funds. About 50% of our funding comes from foundations. That's primarily from two foundations right now, one of which is our school district's foundation, and the other is a community foundation, and the rest comes from an individual donor.
Wow. So, and you're sort of self-sustaining at this point of moving forward, or is it sort of, you're still trying to piece it together year in and year out?
We will be piecing it together each year. So all of the grants that we have for summer are 1 year at a time, other than the supplemental, which is the standard length of a grant is 5 years for the grants that we have. We're coming up on the end of some of those grants, so we'll have to renew them. And with the foundations and individual donors, we'll have to renew each year.
And this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at kalw.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're talking Beyond Summer School, a new vision for summer learning, with our guest Katie Brackenridge, Senior Director of Out of School Time Initiatives Partnerships for Children and Youth, Lara Fox, Director of School Site Programs with the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Peninsula, and Jane O'Brien, Coordinator of Summer Learning Programs with the Family School and Community Partnerships with the Oakland Unified School District. And again, 415-841-4134 is the number to dial if you want to join our conversation tonight. 415-841-4134. You can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. So it's just to kind of summarize where we've come from so far in our conversation tonight. The recent evidence, both in 2007 out of Baltimore and then more recently from the RAND Corporation, showing that summer learning is a very important piece of the school year that needed some more attention because of the impact of the lack of learning opportunities for low-income kids, particularly, and how that set them apart from their peers and widened the achievement gap. And then finding creative ways not only to finance this, but then the content itself, how to find ways to get kids engaged and learning and having fun. And then it sounds like enriching the experience for teachers as well by sort of getting them out of the usual curriculum box and trying to find creative ways to explore teaching. You wanted to say something there, Laura.
Yeah, I think that one of the other huge benefits of programs like these is for both teachers and students alike, that many of our teachers are working with a group of students who will be in their classroom in the fall. And so they're beginning to build relationships in a smaller classroom setting than they have during the school year because we have the low ratios where we do have multiple adults in the room. So they can really start building one-on-one relationships and know the needs and skills and talents and loves of their students before the school year begins. So we've had really strong feedback from our teachers that this is setting them up for a very strong school year.
Hmm. And back to you, Jane, for a moment. It sounds like the number that you can of children that you can serve in any given year fluctuates based on your funding. That's different than your mandate, I imagine, during the actual school year. Mm-hmm. So I imagine there's a lot more children out there that could really benefit from the programs we've been talking about, but perhaps can't accommodate. How do you make the cut? How do you decide?
Well, it's because it's site-based decision-making, the principal is the one who recognizes, the capacity and the students that are most in need. But another mission is to kind of increase the awareness of the programs that are out there. And so one of the things that we've done is create a summer resource guide that we distribute to all of the students in our elementary schools. Probably about 20,000. It lists over 100 different summer programs that exist in the Bay Area so that parents can have access to kind of resources that are out there.
Hmm. And is there any situation in which you might actually reach out to parents and have them sort of put in some of the money so that you can actually allow more children to participate? Or is that sort of against the rules? Like, we're saying here how we're kind of going against convention, but is that something you can't really go after?
We haven't gone that direction yet of collecting money so that schools could accommodate more students.
Katie.
But that is something that could happen in these scenarios, particularly where you're matching a district with a community-based organization as a provider, and it does happen around the state. So you can have, sliding scale fees. You can have scholarships. So in communities where there's a big mix of incomes, that makes a lot of sense because there's lots of families who have the ability to pay, would like their kid in a good program, and they should pay in that case. Those funds can help to support other children to be able to be part of that program. So I can't cite at this moment an example from the summer, but I know, for example, Berkeley Unified has a sliding scale fee for its after-school program that's been hugely successful and raises a significant amount of money for its after-school program. A district could absolutely do that for its summer program. Again, it depends on the range of incomes in a community, whether it makes sense to build in that infrastructure to charge fees and, do all of the background work you'd need to do in order to make sure that's all well done. But in a bunch of districts, that would make a lot of sense.
And how about you, Laura? In Redwood City, how do you work with this issue of, the need is greater than what you can provide?
We're working on funding to grow. So this summer we'll be adding close to 300 more students to the academic model. One of the ways that we're starting that growth is through our clubhouses. So as a Boys and Girls Club, we, in addition to operating at school sites, operate in freestanding buildings called clubhouses, which we own. And our clubhouse programming is actually for a fee, a very small fee. For the summer, it's typically $50. Our school site programs are free in throughout the year. But the clubhouses are now adding the academic piece to their programming in the summer. So we're going to first saturate all the kids that we serve with the academic model. And then from there, we will go out and find funding to go to new schools.
Great. 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. Feedback at cityvisionsradio.com or post a comment on our Facebook page. Let's go to our first caller, Jim. Welcome to the program. Where are you calling from, Jim?
Chuck.
Sorry, we're going to go to Chuck first. Chuck, where are you calling from?
Hi there. I'm in Alameda.
Great. Do you have a question or comment for our guests?
Well, I have four kids, and three of them have had need of summer school at one time or another, and it sounds like it's a lot of work to put the program together and to fund it. And I can tell you as a parent, it's a lot of work to find the right program and hope there is one and does it address the right stuff. And so it seems like on both ends of that, we're kind of reinventing the wheel every year. I was wondering if your guests have any knowledge of year-round school programs and what if they could maybe compare them. Seems to me like it would be easier all the way around to have a year-round program that didn't have the long gap. Those still have a short gap for vacation and such, but they didn't have the long gap that would lead to the loss and would be maybe easier to structure and easier to fund and easier to staff and easier as a parent to populate and all of that.
All right.
I'd be happy to listen to any comments on the radio.
Great. Well, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
So Katie, yeah, how about this longer school year? I imagine that trying to do this for every child is a lot more expensive than it is for the select children who get to be able to do this now. But mm-hmm. But speak to that. Are there examples of year-long schooling that that we can learn from?
Right. Well, what's really interesting is that there are year-round schools. They have the same number of days. It's usually around 180 days. They just spread them out differently. And my assumption in that case was that there would not be as much summer learning loss because it's not as long a period of time. But the research from Johns Hopkins University is the same. They still experience learning loss. So I think what's clear is kids need to be learning for more days of the year. So it doesn't necessarily matter how you spread out those days. You just really need to have kids engaged for more time, which is not something that the state of California is going to invest in at this time. Summer learning programs could be a great opportunity because they are less expensive than a regular school day, and they have this great added advantage of providing all the youth development and project-based learning that Laura already talked about. So I think there's a good opportunity here to do it that way. The other thing I think that districts have found challenging about year-round schooling is kind of logistical. It's hard to find
the time then to deal with the school buildings that you need to maintain. Mm-hmm. So while districts have done this, they've often done it because they have overpopulation and it's a way to stagger the kids through the year. A lot of those districts, when they can, go back to the regular schedule because it's super hard to figure out the kind of infrastructure stuff you need to do. So it's a great question. But it's not necessarily the solution.
But the summer break has been, you know, around for forever, right? Well, not forever, but you know what I mean. It didn't seem to be as much of a concern on our minds that children were not being stimulated over the summer months. Why now? Why are we seeing such a problem with the lack of stimulation during the summer months, the lack of educational opportunities in the summer months? Is there something different about growing up today for kids than it was several decades ago? Or was this something that was always happening and we just weren't really paying a lot of attention to it?
I think there used to be more summer school. So summer school hasn't always been something that only the targeted kids had to go to. I think summer school used to be like a summer learning program where there were academics happening, but there were also a whole array of other things happening at the same time. California's schools used to be funded at a much higher level as well, so that these summer school programs, which people who had gone to them, and when I talk to people of they have to say, you know, this was really fun. I remember going to summer school. It wasn't a torture. It was really great. But things have shifted, and we've targeted our education dollars so specifically to remediation, which can be really important and needed for kids, but it's not all that kids need.
Do you want to add something there, Jane?
No, I think that, we need to recognize, maybe now we know more, but when you think of athletes or musicians, none of them take 2 months off and expect to be able to come back in the fall in prime shape. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's kind of the concept we have to keep in mind when we think of 2 months off during the summer, is that we want to keep kids active with their mind and their body. It's also a health issue in the terms of kids being just sitting around. And I think I've read statistics that the BMI of a student can jump.
The body mass index,
yes,
of a student.
Yes, mm-hmm. Twice as fast during the summer than it can during the school year, based upon the fact that they just don't have the activity.
And with our concerns around childhood obesity rates, this is quite concerning. Mm-hmm. 415-841-4134 to join our conversation tonight on City Visions here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at klwo.org with our guests Katie Brackenridge, Lara Fox, and Jane O'Brien. 415-841-4134. Feedback at cityvisionsradio.com or post a comment on our Facebook page. Let's go to our next caller, Sharon from Oakland. Welcome to the program.
Hello. I'm a retired teacher. After 40 years of teaching, I've seen a lot of what you're talking about with really boring summer school programs that used to have a lot of excitement, but they've cut them back so much that it's been only about academics, and people haven't known really how to make a big difference in 16 days, let's say 16 mornings. And I just wanted to say that in the last couple of years, I've been experimenting at a couple of schools, in one school in Richmond and one in San Lorenzo, and we have made a really exciting, fun way to learn to catch up in reading really fast. We actually did a summer school in a week in Richmond at one school, because that was the only time we could do it. And we made up to 2 years' growth in word recognition with kids. So no worksheets, very fun. And I'd love to know how to connect with the people in Oakland, because I'd love to talk, because I love the idea of spreading it out into the arts and having all of that project-based learning. And it's very exciting to me. So I'm just wondering, how can I connect with people about this?
As a teacher, you mean to want to get involved?
Yeah, I'd love to get involved.
We're hiring at the Boys and Girls Club. We need to hire about 40 teachers for the summer.
I hire to be a teacher. Yeah. I would love to talk to you about some things that I could offer in terms of the academic part.
Great. Okay, yeah, Katie.
So you could go to our website, which is Summer Matters 2.
Okay.
It's the number 2. you.net, And if you send an email to that link, I can connect you with Jane and some other folks in the Oakland community who are working on this stuff.
That was great. So it's summermatters2you.net.
Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
And say your name again. I'm sorry.
Katie Breckenridge.
Katie Breckenridge. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Sharon, for your call.
Thank you.
And we have an email from Jim in Menlo Park who wants to know if there are online learning programs that could be used to supplement in-person summer programs. And we're getting blank stares.
We certainly incorporate some online learning into our programs in terms of computer-based and web-based math and literacy programs, mm-hmm. but we haven't yet reached the point of providing a whole summer program online to somebody who's not physically present.
Right. And I wonder if behind his question there is this question of reach, right?
Yeah.
If you have some things online, you might be able to reach more kids this way. And I wonder the other thing is part of why the summer months may be more detrimental to children than they used to be is because what kids used to do during the summer, whether it was within the school walls or not, was different, where there was more activity, there was more kind of getting your hands in your community and just running around and playing and doing other things. And perhaps the ways of technology have led us to a more disconnected way of occupying our time. Any thoughts on that? Katie?
Well, I think one of the big factors is that in a lot of families, particularly low-income families, both parents are working, and neighborhoods may not be safe enough for people to go out and play, you know, the way I was able to growing up and explore kind of freely. That can be actually a dangerous endeavor in a lot of the neighborhoods that kids are growing up in now. So as a result, you know, parents are keeping their kids indoors where they feel that it's safer, and that's when the TV and the eating all day and not getting enough exercise is coming in. I'm not sure that was as true in the past, particularly with two parents not being there to take kids places.
415-841-4134 or feedback@cityvisionsradio.com to join our conversation tonight here on summer learning. So I want to now turn to a little bit more about the outcomes, and we've sort of talked a little bit about this before. So, Lara, you had mentioned this about some of the outcomes of the programs that you've done in the peninsula. Tell us a little bit more about what the impact you've seen and how you've taken that information and parlayed it into adjustments to your model over time.
So we have a number of measures of success for our program. Some of them are academic. Some relate to the number of adults that children feel are supporting them in their education, their aspirations for the future. So we have a strong focus on college and career knowledge from kindergarten on up. And so we're looking at building their aspirations as well. On the aspirational front, we just keep seeing they can learn everything we tell them. So if we want them to know the names of two or three colleges, they can know 10. So now we're teaching them things like public versus private college, 2-year versus 4-year, you know, even at the elementary grades. So we're seeing that it's very easy to acquire that kind of college and career knowledge. And so we're stepping that up. On the academic front, we had pretty strong results 2 summers ago when we piloted this model. And even stronger results last year. And so I think that came down to consistency of the message to all teachers so that everybody was really implementing the same model. We expanded from 1 site to 3. We had a lot more legwork time. We were able to meet with our teachers earlier in the spring last year and do planning teams with like the whole team of teachers at a site. So everybody knew what everybody else would be working on in science or in math. They had plenty of time to prepare. So I think that some of the stepping it up was getting on the ball sooner. This year, we're actually looking at using a math curriculum. So as much as I absolutely love to give teachers the creative curriculum design time, a lot of other folks would like to see us using a curriculum, and we're delighted to build our teachers' skills for the school year. So we're looking at a program called Jump Math, which really focuses on sort of small wins. So there are incremental steps that are very clear to the student and the teacher, so that there's the progress that's being made is evident throughout a short-term like 5-week summer program.
And you mentioned this with the aspirational piece. Are there any other measures of, I don't know how you would put it, self-esteem or other sort of quality of life measures of how children feel before they enter a program and how they feel after they leave a program?
Yeah, I mean, we actually, during our school year, have a youth development survey that was developed between our Boys and Girls Club, the John Gardner Center for Youth and Their Families at Stanford, and the Community Network for Youth Development a number of years back. And so we use a number of the same questions in the summer. We're asking them questions from, you know, how safe do you feel when you're at our club versus how safe do you feel in your community? You know, do you feel that the adults that you see here would support you if you needed them? To questions about the future, to you know, it's sort of the full range of youth development concepts are covered, and so we have a pretty good sense of where they feel pretty good and where they don't. So we know, for example, that safety is always a concern. All of our kids live in neighborhoods that have a lot of gang activity, a lot of poverty, and they're you know, very aware of that. We also know that, for example, one of the fundamental components of youth development is youth participation, and we never get quite the percentage we want on youth participation. Like, they realize that they're participating and making choices in the program to some extent, but we want that super high. That's what youth development's about. So that's something that really pushes us to. We have an elective model, so all of the enrichment, they're choosing what enrichment class they're taking. They're picking soccer versus gardening versus yoga, so that they are, yes,
yoga.
That's the fun range.
That's great.
So we look really closely at that survey.
And Jane, are you seeing now, granted you're not working with Lara, but mm-hmm. in this, as a result of the programs that you've put into place in Oakland, have you seen then those gains kind of continue into the school year? What do you see once the school year starts and throughout it that you can point to, aha, this is from our summer learning program?
So one of the things that we learned this past summer is we know that the moving from fifth grade to sixth grade to the middle school is pretty much of a challenge. And so we followed 200 of our summer bridge rising sixth graders, we call them, into their first marking period of their sixth grade. And of the 200 that we followed, we found that 93% of them had 96% or higher in attendance, which is really quite good. And 88% of them had C's or higher in English or math. And so we found that from these kids, you know, that they really had a strong foundation from which to start their sixth grade year. We didn't have capacity to kind of follow them through the school year. So one of the questions that comes up is sustainability. You know, if we were to follow them in now, kind of what would we be seeing? But we did take the opportunity to do some interviews with 25 of the students at one of the middle schools to have those conversations of, you know, did summer, would you come back and do it again? How would you change it for the new rising sixth graders? And the results from those 25 kids was just amazing. I mean, they were very thoughtful and very, you know, kind of appreciative of the program that they attended. And so it was, you know, food for us in terms of how we will adapt for this coming summer.
And it seems like you have quite a bump there. And is your are your measurements able to get at what the attributable piece to this impact is? Can you point to what aspect of the summer learning environment leads to these gains? Katie, you sort of raising your eyebrows there. I'm not sure why.
Well, yeah. I have a face that does that. I think it's a level of nuance we may not be at yet. Mm. But I would say that referring back to that RAND Corporation study, one of the things that they definitely flagged was that not all summer programs are showing measurable results, and they're really linking that back to the quality of the program. And one of the key factors, which is not surprising, is that attendance really matters. So kids have to come in order to realize a benefit of having been at the program. And that, you know, as a result, they're really looking at the enrichment pieces as a very strong hook for kids to be there, and that the community-based partners that they work with are a really important key part of that, because that's their expertise, as Laura's been talking about. And those relationships are really, really important. But I think the other really important piece of that is just overall looking at the quality of the program, the staffing, the
youth staff ratio, kids' sense of safety in the program, all of those kinds of pieces that will make a difference as to whether kids come and whether the program is having an impact.
Because basically what we've outlined is you bring in master teachers, Laura has talked about. You bring in a content that is creative and that stimulates creativity and is enriching. And you mix it up so that there's definite academic learning happening side by side and intertwined with creative experiences and experiential learning getting out into the community. You're talking about the optimal or more optimal ratios between staff and students. It sounds like you're designing a great school for the school year. Who wouldn't want to be in a school environment like this? So it'd be very interesting to hear over time if you can start to pinpoint which one of those pieces are, how they're synergistic in terms of the impact that they create. But it begs the question for me, you know, if you create such a wonderful summer learning environment, could you imagine that this shouldn't become the school year itself? Yes,
so
Laura.
We actually, we love our summer model, and we have been so excited by what we've seen in that partnership between our after-school instructor and the teacher that we are looking at bringing that to the after-school program during the school year. Obviously, it would be a huge funding increase to have a school teacher in every classroom when we serve 700 kids during the school year. So we're starting with just our middle school program, so starting with only 3 grade levels, but looking at increasing our funding to be able to include school teachers and other experts. So sort of if we were teaching robotics instead of having a 20-year-old teach it, have an engineer teach it. Well, who it could be a 20-year-old, but somebody who is a master of engineering teaching it. So we're really looking at investing in partnering our after-school instructors with teachers or other specialized instructors throughout the after-school hours, at least at the middle school level.
I want to get to a couple of emails before the end of our conversation tonight. The first is from Alec Lee of a program called Aim High, and he wants to thank all 3 participants for pointing out that summer learning needs to be different and encouraging educators to move beyond test score driven culture in many schools to create interdisciplinary and creative ways to learn. And the second email is from Sean, a San Francisco Unified School District school teacher, pointing out that the guests are talking about how low-income children are the ones who are in need here of these enrichment programs, and yet those who are really in need are African American Latino students, Black and Brown, as he says, and that there's a racial factor here that has not been mentioned, and suggesting that perhaps the school system is racist. We have like 2 minutes at this point in the conversation, but any thoughts from you, Jane? From the Oakland Unified School District, you're not San Francisco Unified School District. Any thoughts about this?
Well, you know, I'm not quite sure how to respond because I know that, you know, each site, the principal is the one who's most familiar with the students and recognizes those that are most in need. But since we have such a diverse population in Oakland that is predominantly African American and Latino, you know, I question the racism.
Okay. Well, it sounds like that's perhaps another whole other conversation that we need to have separately. But I want to thank Sean for your email. And Katie, to close with you, what are the public policy and financing next steps here to kind of get this on a bigger scale and capitalize on the growth that has already been mentioned here tonight?
Great. So my organization works with a coalition of advocacy and educators across the state to look at how we can expand and improve summer learning across the state, and that's the Summer Matters campaign. Recognizing that there's not going to be new state funding for summer programming in the short term, absolutely. We're really looking at the local level, and we're working with superintendents and school board members and parents and mayors and city councils and really trying to highlight the opportunity here to build a great program like we've heard about tonight. And, you know, there was a kickoff event in San Francisco just last week with the state superintendent, Tom Torlakson. He's taking this on. He's really encouraging mayors and superintendents to look at their resources, put them together, and figure out how to do summer learning in a positive way for kids.
And that's City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were Katie Brackenridge, Senior Director of Out-of-School Time Initiatives Partnership for Children and Youth, Laura Fox, Director of School Site Programs with the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Peninsula, and Jane O'Brien, Coordinator of Summer Learning Programs, Family, School, and Community Partnerships with the Oakland Unified School District. Thanks to you for joining me this evening.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And for a link to this and other City Vision shows, to learn more about our program, to comment about tonight's show, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, go to kalw.org and search for City Visions. Our engineer this evening was Eric Jansen. Tonight's show was produced by Victoria Thorpe, and our senior producer is Susie Britton. I'll be away next week. Lauren Meltzer will be here when we talk about the UN International Year of the Cooperative. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.